Hi, this is John Jenkins, Senior Editor of DealLawyers.com, and I'd like to welcome you to this edition of our Deal Lawyers Download podcast. My guest today is John Keppel. John is a partner in the Lippis Mathias Buffalo and New York offices and leads the firm's private equity team. John's agreed to join us today to talk a bit about his practice and current trends in private equity deals. So with that, please join me in welcoming John to the podcast.
Thanks, John. Really appreciate the intro. So just quick on my background, I'm practicing for over two decades, really all aspects of M&A and private equity, working with buyers, sellers, private equity firms, independent sponsors, strategics. It's a great practice area. It's obviously very robust, very busy these days. Personally, I've got two daughters, one in college, one heading into college soon. So that keeps me happy and occupied when I'm not here working on deals. So looking forward to kind of chatting with you, John, and your audience today.
Well, great. I mean, it's obviously been hot and heavy the last several years when it comes to all M&A, but private equity in particular has been. I just left my own firm. I left after 35 years and did some private equity work and some public company M&A as well. And I know how fast and furious the deals were being cranked out at our shop. So maybe you can talk a little bit about kind of the competitive market and how the increasing competition for deals has impacted the deal process and as you've seen it evolve.
Yeah, it continues to be a very, very, robust market. Certainly, I think, a lot of drivers for that, still a lot of capital on the sidelines. So, banks willing to certainly lend to support deal flow, right? You certainly have a lot of business owners, transition events, people considering is now a good time to sell my business. A lot of business owners went through COVID and the pandemic, and maybe they had a slightly longer time horizon and realized, wow, that was a pretty historic event. Not sure I want to go through something like that again. Maybe now is a good time to consider selling my business or bringing a partner. And obviously, there were some proposed tax changes last year. They ultimately weren't implemented at the time. That certainly drove a lot of deal activity, but it's continued to stay very, very robust as we head into this year.
Great. Now, one of the issues always is financing deals. I mean, a lot of there's a lot of promises on the private equity side, and fingers crossed, and reverse termination fees and all that type of stuff to support them. But how are private equity buyers approaching deal financing in the current?
Yeah, I think deal financing it hasn't changed that much in the market. I think obviously interest rates are creeping up a bit, so that always changes how deals get modeled. A buyer of a company, whether it's strategic or a private firm, is always looking at return on investment, right? How cost of capital, whether they're borrowing money, they're using their equity, what do they can grow that business to. So, I mean, that's always going to have a bit of an impact, but we're still seeing banks, whether it's a traditional, a regional lender or a larger bank, or whether it's a more of a private lender or a unitranche or a BDC, we're still seeing a lot of financing available for good deals. So, we're not seeing any slowdown on the capital providing side for attractive opportunities.
Okay, great. Kind of a broader question along the same theme. And what kind of trends are you seeing in deal terms?
It's still seller friendly market, right? So if it's a good company, certainly seeing sellers demand or certainly request fairly seller friendly type terms, right? One thing I wanted to touch on is, the two types of deals at a high level in the private market are those that are quote unquote bank, meaning there's an investment banker or a broker that might be running a process. There's certainly a number of deals that have that aspect. There's still quite a few what we would call proprietary deals, where a company is approached directly by a private equity buyer or strategic, say, hey, I'd like to buy your business. And there may not necessarily be a banker or a broker involved. So both aspects of those deal dynamics are staying pretty strong. I think, and deal terms can, albeit while the market is robust, deal terms tend to be very bespoke, right? You could have a certain business owner looking for a certain term or rollover equity or a certain aspect of the deal that they is really important for them. And some buyers may be fine with that, others may not. So, we work with a fairly broad group of buyers and sellers, and our job as their counsel is to really help them achieve their end goal, whatever that, unique term in the market will be. But as an overall theme, still a fairly robust, seller-friendly deal market right now.
Okay, great. So let's talk about another component of the deal making process that has become really increasingly important and kind of a game changer over the last decade or so, and that's rep and warranty insurance. I've heard anecdotally that it's getting tougher simply because of the deal times are compressed, so the exclusions, the due diligence isn't as deep, and there are more exclusions in the policy, and that underwriters are taking a pass more frequently than they have in the past. What is it like out there right now trying to get rep and warranty insurance?
It's still a robust market. Certainly had some challenges in the Q4 with volume. So it's really it's an interesting product. So if you go back 5 or 10 years. Almost every deal was the indemnification or the protections post-closing were often served by an escrow, a percentage of the price that was not paid at closing that was set aside, whether it's for 12 months or 18 months or whatever the period was, to satisfy potential indemnity claims, right? So the rep and warranty insurance product, it's a great product because, rather than the buyer having to go against the seller or a cash escrow, the buyer puts a claim in against the carrier, right? An insurance policy to insure the reps and warranties in the deal. So it's added some unique dynamics in terms of how a deal gets done, the enhancement of sort of the diligence. It's been a really good solution. Pricing has gone up in the market. Policy premiums have gone up. And there certainly was a period in particular in Q4 and December of last year, it was a little bit trickier to get policies lined up, but we're still seeing that be a really good solution to kind of bridge the gap between buyers and sellers. Then there's other aspects of deal insurance, even beyond rep and warranty. I've done a few deals last year that have used environmental insurance, right? So there could be a business that's on a site that's maybe not the cleanest property in the world. And to bridge that gap, the parties may have purchased an environmental insurance policy to kind of mitigate some of that risk. So still a robust insurance market. Not all deals have deal insurance. When you go lower mid, below 50, below 25 million of enterprise value, don't see the policies as often, but certainly above those dollar levels of enterprise value, you see them frequently.
Okay, great. I know we've kind of talked a bit kind of from the buyer's perspective here, but and this is something that both parties have an interest in, but tax mitigation strategies, what are you seeing that's effective that's being employed in deals these days?
So, yeah, it's funny because obviously tax and payment of taxes and trying to mitigate some tax costs is a key driver of almost any deal, and in particular, for sellers trying to keep as much in their pocket, right? So number of strategies we see. So one is the concept of rollover equity, right? So, John, you're going to buy my business for $50 million, right? Maybe you're going to pay me $40 million in cash and $10 million of the deal proceeds are going to be rolled over into equity in a new co or in your business, right? So as a seller, if I believe in your vision and we've got good alignment of interest, that can be very compelling because typically that can be structured in a way that I don't pay any tax now. I'm going to defer that tax on the rollover equity, right? And then we have really strong alignment of interest. You oftentimes buyers like that because we're aligned to kind of continue to grow the business after the closing, right? The seller's kind of, running off to the hills, so to speak. So rollover equity is one component we continue to see a fair amount. When the tax law changed a few years ago, we're seeing more and more parties look at QSBS, which is called Qualified Small Business Stock. And it's a way for certain size deals to potentially qualify for no capital gains on a future event. The other program we're seeing a little bit more of, both in real estate and in some private deals, is QOZ, Qualified Opportunity Zone. So again, another program where, depending upon the circumstance of the business, where it's located, how it's being structured, but we're spending more and more time these days with sellers on the front end, sitting down with them, talking about what are their goals, whether it's their family, a trust, or an estate, or whatever. Are they looking for all the consideration at once? Are they looking for it over time? Do they want to take some equity in the buyer? Do they not? Right? There's a number of different levers you can kind of pull to try to mitigate some of the tax impacts of any transaction.
Okay, great. Again, and maybe in closing, this is probably the best question for at least my best seller focused question, which is essentially if you're working with a seller that's you know, looking at selling the business and is looking to do a deal with private equity being the most logical buyer for them, what kind of advice do you have for a seller who's considering a deal with a private equity buyer?
No, it's a great question. You know, I think each one of our sell side clients has sort of slightly different motivation. Some might be looking for literally last dollar. Others might be really concerned about the legacy of their business, their employees, their customer base, right? And I think it's really incumbent upon them to do a deep dive, kind of interview those different buyers, really understand, maybe get references of other business owners that have been acquired by that firm. How do they approach the business post-closing, the employees, the key customers, et cetera? And if there's if you find as a business owner that there's that one nagging thing, you know, it generally seems okay, but there's one comment you heard which is negative, or there's something nagging in the background, you know, that may want to give you some pause with that particular buyer, or certainly may want to do a deeper dive and say, hey, just so and so said this in terms of how you are to work with, or this is my key concern, right? It's hard. It's really hard for a seller to evaluate a buyer because obviously they have their best foot forward. But I think through references, both formally and informally, and kind of, you know, word of mouth, you can find out what's that counterparty like to work with. You know, is that going to be a really good partnership? Because most, it's a family-owned business and they've built up an amazing product or service and they're concerned about their legacy. They're typically not just going to sell to any old firm, right? They really want to have that name and that brand, that legacy sort of continue.
All right, great. Well, that's a good point to close on. And John, I appreciate your time today with us. Very informative. And best of luck to you and your firm as you continue to pursue deals in the private equity space.
Awesome. Thanks so much, John. Really appreciate it.